Hey, this is Double J, Jeff Jarrett, WWE Hall of Famer, and you're listening to the My 1-2-3 Cents Podcast.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo! Kevin! You're stupid.
Hey friends, welcome to episode 492 of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast. I am your host, Kevin Huntsberger, and this week joined by Chad Smart, once again from the West Coast. And Chad, I hadn't initially intended to do a podcast on this subject, but we had a conversation on the phone last week, and it really got my wheels spinning and turning, and I took the time to sit down over the weekend and watch the Bray Wyatt Becoming Immortal documentary by WWE. And again, wonderful production. You expect nothing less from WWE. But tell me initially what your thoughts were going into and watching this documentary. We're going to kind of dissect not just the documentary, but some other thoughts about Bray Wyatt, the future of the Wyatt family, and moving forward.
You know, I didn't really have much expectation into watching it. I just kind of watched it because it was there, kind of like the Vlad documentary and something else that they put out recently. It was just like, hey, I got time. And I thought it was interesting. I liked the use of Bray Wyatt interviews that hadn't publicly been seen before or heard before. Mm-hmm. And I thought they had a good selection of people, you know, speaking throughout the show, or the film. So yeah, it was an interesting look at the career and the evolution of Husky Harris to the Fiend.
And I want to pause for a second about the documentary and step back to earlier this month, you know, and get your thoughts on, because we had speculated in our Hall of Fame episode that Bray Wyatt would be inducted into the Hall of Fame this year. His father, Mike Rotundo, and uncle, Barry Windham, were both inducted as the U.S. Express. But Bray was not. And I'm curious to get your thoughts. You've really made your kind of opinion known about the five-year rule once someone is inactive or has passed away. We saw Eddie Guerrero, you know, who had died in November of 2005, was inducted that following April of 06. But we haven't really seen anything else quite like that. I think maybe Bray Wyatt, and someone will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Bray Wyatt is the first active superstar to pass away, active roster superstar to pass away since Eddie Guerrero. And so were you surprised that Bray did not get inducted?
A little bit, but, you know, again, I do think that it was the right call not to induct him. You know, Barry and Mike did wear Bray Wyatt t-shirts that they showed off during the ceremony. So, I will hold fast to the rule that you got to put some time between either retirement or, unfortunately, you know, death, just because if you, and depending on how soon after the passing, the Hall of Fame comes up, you know, like Eddie was, I believe, in September, and then
November.
Oh, and so even closer. That to me just, again, it just feels like exploitation, where you're just trying to take the sympathy vote and get the fans into it. But yeah, I, and then of course, you know, someone like Rey Mysterio, who's still actively competing. I think if you're active, you shouldn't be, I don't care how long you, but you know, trying to think of someone who's got a long career going right now. But like The Undertaker shouldn't have been inducted until, he was done. It was, yeah, career was over. But But that's my own personal feelings. I don't, I mean, I'm, I guess I'm a bad wrestling fan. I'm not going to go online and complain if they do induct him sooner than that. I just go like, yeah, it's not my call. But yeah, I think I was a little surprised that Bray wasn't inducted, but I think the class that they had was fine.
Two other notes about Hall of Fame, and obviously we're under a new leadership run, if you will. And I think Vince was always very adamant, or seemingly so, about how many posthumous inductions mm-hmm. happened, you know. But this year we had two with Muhammad Ali and Leah Maivia. So I found that to be a little interesting. I really felt like, you know, this is the first time I think ever that the quote unquote main event talent was first on the show. That's one caveat, but then also a manager and not a wrestler. And to your point earlier as well, an active manager at that. So I found those interesting, but then also there was no Warrior Award presentation mm-hmm. this year. So I don't know if that's, again, something they're going to do away with or just do it when they feel it is appropriate. This is also the first year that two women were inducted into the Hall of Fame. So I found that kind of interesting too, not counting when they inducted DX with China and then whatever female superstar went in that year. And again, I apologize for not knowing that.
Do you think the Warrior Award they did away with because Dana Warrior is no longer employed?
Could be. I didn't think about that. That could be. I also wonder if that is something that could have been independent of the Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame.
And not just because, you know, I don't know how they classify it. I guess I haven't paid close enough attention, but like, I don't think Joan London is listed on the WWE Hall of Fame page. Maybe she is. I don't know. She's a Warrior Award recipient mm-hmm. from several years ago for her work with the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Foundation. But yeah, so I don't know. Kind of veered off here for just a minute to mm-hmm. talk about Hall of Fame.
That's okay. I had a comment that I'll share with you afterwards. Okay. It's one of those "will you stop" moments that
I'm wearing that shirt today too. "Will you stop," my Gorilla Monsoon shirt. So we'll remember it because we're pushing 50 now. So we'll have forgotten it by the time the show is over. But so back to Bray Wyatt, the documentary. To me, you know, I loved it again. It was filled with the emotion that you would expect, and it was the stories from not only his ex-wife, his current wife, or, you know, his widow, JoJo, mom, dad, Uncle Barry, the brother and sister, Micah and Taylor, who we know as Bo Dallas. I did wonder at one point, because we saw footage of the ceremony, the memorial service. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember in history before of being inside the service. I know we've seen the pictures from outside of Owen Hart's funeral and Chris Benoit's funeral and Eddie Guerrero's, but I don't remember ever being inside. And we saw the B-roll. You know, I saw Dustin Rhodes in the video footage, and Roman Reigns hugs Taylor Rotundo. Part of me is then obviously wondering. I mean, the WWE had something in mind, something going on when all of this was happening, right? I mean, and I don't look at that as a bad thing, because obviously the Rotundo family signed off on it.
Yeah, I would think so. And I guess, you know, part of me is also kind of glad that they didn't stream the funeral service when it happened, like, which I could understand. If had they done it, I could understand, due to, again, Bray being an active wrestler, fans wanting to, probably see that. But that's a time for the family and friends. Mm-hmm. I would assume that something was in the works if they knew to send, you know, because it wasn't like cell phone
right
footage. It wasn't something that they got from the people that were there. It was a professional shoot. And I don't know. That's a good question. If they had something, or if they just wanted it for their own archives, or the Wyndham family or the Rotunda family, you know, have something they could go back and watch. But I don't know. to show his kid, you know, because his kids are very young. So
yeah, very good point there too. Bray Wyatt, obviously a third generation superstar, grandfather Black Jack Mulligan, his dad is Mike Rotundo, as we have established, and uncle was Barry Windham, or is Barry Windham. Where do you see Bray?
Oh, you're just going to skip over Kendall?
Oh,
I never get disrespect.
I forgot Uncle Kendall Windham as well. But yeah, where do you see Bray Wyatt in the structure, if you will? Because, you know, in WWE, he obviously had some ups and downs. Personally, I was a fan of the Husky Harris persona, the character. But watching the documentary, I do get where that moniker was probably not flattering and probably a bit insulting. But I liked it. But obviously, then that evolution to Bray Wyatt and eventually The Fiend, to me, was incredible and puts him as probably, depending on how much more they were going to do with him in the future, I would say the most successful of the Wyndham Mulligan Rotundo family.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't remember, you know, by the time I started watching wrestling, Black Jack Mulligan was past his prime and was just showing up. And it's funny because I just saw a video the other day where it was like top 10 superstars that peaked early in their careers, and Barry Windham was on that list. And they said he never really lived up to the potential, either due to, you know, his personal stuff or the fact that he, you know, was jumping around from WWF to WCW a lot and just never really stood in one place long enough to cement him. And then Mike Rotunda, he had a good run as IRS, but then you look at his WCW stuff, which was never really, after the Varsity Club, he was more of a JTTS.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think the Bray, probably was the most, it's an interesting career path. Again, I don't think Husky Harris was going to set the world on fire, just because I don't think that, I mean, there wasn't much character there.
Right. You
know? So the evolution into Bray, I'm not thinking back, watching that documentary and then thinking back on it, I'm not really a big fan of The Fiend, and I probably touch on it a little bit later, but I think The Fiend kind of, I think the idea was bigger than the execution.
Okay. And we will get there and talk more in depth on those aspects of it. And again, there's no real structure to this podcast. We're just kind of riffing and freestyling. And one of the things that stood out to me was people in the right places saw some potential. And sometimes I think when superstars or people who are trying to get their foot in the door are playing at one time and for, 40 plus years, we're playing to an audience of one, being Vince McMahon. And I think that Triple H, I don't know how much of this is part of the storytelling of the Bray Wyatt story and how much of it is what actually happened. I tend to believe that a lot of this is what happened. You know, Triple H saw something there and believed in him and brought him back down to FCW, or I don't think it was NXT yet, or it might have just started becoming NXT, and working with him and developing that character work. And I think that's where the benefit of not just one person in charge comes into play, because what Vince McMahon likes or doesn't like, how many other potentially great characters and superstars did we miss out on because they didn't pass the Vince test?
Yeah. Or, you know, you could even look at it as, if it had stayed with Husky Harris, just in general, how many wrestlers have not found that character that worked. And with Vince, you know, he could like something on Monday and then by Friday change his mind. Yeah. And I think, you know, also you mentioned Triple H, but how much influence did Dusty Rhodes have in those early Bray Wyatt days, you know, when he was leading FCW and NXT? And,
yeah.
You know, that's, I mean, if talking documentaries, that's the documentary I would like to see, is the early focusing on the early days of NXT to see how it was run and see, you know, we've seen bits and pieces through this documentary, through Tough Enough, the last time they did that. But I definitely would credit Dusty as being a big influence and helping shape the character. Mm-hmm. But definitely, yeah, with Vince there, and it, I don't know, you know, it's a good thing that Vince, I guess, liked it as long as he did.
Yeah.
But then you look at, again, I was looking at Bray Wyatt's WrestleMania matches, and I think he had 5 matches, and two of them, you know, the one with The Undertaker was fine, and then the Firefly Funhouse match, which was just a creation of its own, mm-hmm. you know, due to the pandemic. But his matches with Orton and his other match with Cena were not, I don't know, I think they were down points in that career or in that character development.
So do you believe that at WrestleMania 30, which would have been his Mania debut, I believe, should he have beaten John Cena?
Definitely. If you're going to position him as, you know, this new, I mean, I feel like there was always, and then maybe it was just talk online, but there was always speculation that he would be the new Undertaker,
right,
going forward. Not necessarily, you know, an undefeated streak at WrestleMania, but he was going to be your supernatural character. And I wonder, you know, going back to WrestleMania 29, when Fandango beat Chris Jericho, and then they never did anything with Fandango after that, if that has had some lingering, because I mean, you can look at other matches since then where a new seemingly potential top guy has come in and then lost at Mania, because it's mm-hmm. like, well, until you get established, we don't want to have to look back and be like, you know, what were we thinking? So had the Bray Wyatt character beaten Cena but then not gone on to have any longevity, would it have been, you know, a questionable outcome? Whereas now we look at it and say, well, it was a questionable outcome that Cena won.
Right. You know, and it's interesting too, because, and I agree with you, I do think that Bray should have won that one. And I would almost go so far, and we can talk about this now or in a little bit as well, the year later when Bray wrestles The Undertaker. Now, the streak was already beaten for The Undertaker. Right. I would almost have advocated that Bray breaks the streak at WrestleMania 31 instead of Brock doing it. I think that Bray would have benefited more from that than Brock would have. Because Brock was going to be an indestructible monster, whether he beat Undertaker or not.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's, I believe, speculation that Taker was supposed to win up until, like, when the match started. And then Vince changed his mind.
Mm.
And so going back to, you know, what we were saying about Vince, and
yeah,
depending on which way the wind's blowing, the decision gets made. But I agree with you. I think, again, going into it, if Bray is going to be your next, you know, character, giant character, then he should have beaten Undertaker. And not necessarily put Undertaker out to pasture, but
right,
you want a passing of the torch.
Well, let me ask you this, and let's frame it like this, and I know each case is separate and different, and you can't generalize, but, you know, from our childhood, you know, in the 80s and even into the 90s, wrestling had its factions, and, you know, obviously the Four Horsemen were kind of the premier group, and that was four single guys put together and, you know, a tag team, and they became this faction. Mm-hmm. And so WWF, from what I can remember as a kid, didn't really have the same kind of factions, but let's just use the Freebirds as a random example. So you have the Freebirds, they wrestle singles, they wrestle as a tag team, they wrestle as a six-man tag. The Wyatt family, was a faction, obviously, at this time too. And I'm not comparing the Freebirds and the Wyatt family by any means, but I'm using it as an example of, would it have made sense for, say, Michael Hayes to go on and beat Ric Flair on a big card at a Starrcade, for example, or you know what I mean? And I'm probably stretching here. So I can almost see where at that early stage of the Wyatt family and Bray Wyatt, was he still viewed by management as part of a trio instead of a singles guy? Whereas John Cena was the biggest superstar in the company. But again, that win shoots Bray Wyatt up to the next stratosphere. And then he lifts the guys that he's with as well. So yeah, I mean, I guess it's really not an argument, but I just wonder if that may have been part of the logic or reasoning behind that decision.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, and it all also depends on what stories you're telling after WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. And where, you know, if you're going to position John Cena to be back into the title picture, then having him win at Mania puts him in that path. Whereas same thing with Bray. If Bray was going to, if you're going to move him up to be a credible challenger, because I don't believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Bray, did Bray ever hold any secondary titles? Because I know Harper and Rowan were tag champs and Harper was IC champ, but
yeah. I don't think Bray ever was. I think it was just the WWE Championship that he won.
So, yeah. So if you're going to position him,
Hardy.
Oh yeah, that's forget that ever happened. Yeah, and I don't know. I got nothing.
Building off of that though, I do think that when he eventually did win the championship, and I'm not minimizing or taking anything away from that, but it did to me as a fan. And again, I'm not in their target demo. I'm just an older fan. To me, even though I liked Bray Wyatt still and thought he was a great character, gimmick, story, whatever you want to put that category in, to me, that title win came too late. It felt less than, and maybe it's because he lost to John Cena and The Undertaker, and he lost to these bigger established stars and then got to the point where when he finally did win it, it just didn't feel as important or significant to me. I didn't necessarily buy him as the WWE champion.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to remember when he won the title and who he beat, and I have no recollection. I just know that he was champion.
I think he won it in an elimination chamber, maybe.
Oh, that's right, because Mania. then he lost it to Orton at Mania. Yeah. The next month. Yeah. So again, to me, that's bad storytelling. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, it's like when, you know, you had The Rock win the title and Cena win the Rumble just so they could get to their once in a lifetime part two match.
Yeah.
At Mania. You know, it's like, I don't think Bray and Orton needed the title in their match because that was when Randy was infiltrating the Wyatt family and trying to show emotion and Randy Orton should never try. I think that also hurt because I think it was kind of a foregone conclusion that Bray was going to lose the title.
Right, right.
So having it on him for 3 or 4 weeks, you know, what's the point? And I think too, with that, because that was after Daniel Bryan had, you know, been in the Wyatt family for a brief period of time and then turned on him. So it just felt like a rehash storyline that, that was just kind of rushed and didn't. And then, like I said, the other problem is the match is at Mania with Orton, you know, because that one, the first one for the title, was the one where they had the projection screen on the mat of the maggots and the worms and whatever. And it just like, it's like they took the supernatural element too far.
Right.
It didn't make sense into what was happening. And, you know, and I don't know if the people there in the at WrestleMania could see the projection of what was on the mat, or if that was just, you know, something that the home audience would see, because then we got the overhead shot. I think that match just, with those elements going too far, also kind of hurt the Bray Wyatt character, where I think after that he needed to do something to evolve.
Well, and that's, you know, in wrestling, obviously, you know, when you think about characters that made that impact and that were characters and gimmicks, if you will, that we still talk about today, you know, you look at The Undertaker, you look at Kane, Triple H, Goldust. Those are guys that I think of, Chris Jericho, that not constantly, but they were evolving those characters and changing those characters up over decades. And this was still in a time where we were not getting as much wrestling. You know, things were obviously ramping up with SmackDown and Raw, and then monthly pay-per-views. But man, it seems like now wrestling and these guys are getting overexposed, maybe a bit too extreme, but they're on a lot, especially if they're doing the PLEs and then they're on Raw and or SmackDown. And then just being on other events and special things and whatnot. Do fans get tired of the sameness of it and want that change? Or, you know, we've seen, you know, just over the last couple of weeks, the end of a 3+ year long title run with Roman Reigns. And now he's kind of faded away and I'm sure we'll come back and the fans will cheer for him. But do you think with the Bray Wyatt character, because it was, you know, a bit of that, you know, for some reason in the 90s, we bought into the Undertaker being this supernatural power that could summon lightning bolts and whatnot, and rise from the dead. Was it too far-fetched for the Bray Wyatt character to be in that same supernatural vein? I question and wonder. Because the initial Bray Wyatt, to me, the Cape Fear, Robert De Niro inspired character, Waylon Mercy, I was trying to think of Danny Spivey's name. I liked that version of him, that kind of cult leader with Harper and Rowan and the look of it all. To me, it was fresh, it was new, it was different. And I think that could have played longer than it actually ended up playing.
Yeah, I agree with you that I think that character, the supernatural element didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think when he came back with the Firefly Funhouse, say that five times fast,
yeah.
Firefly Funhouse, where he was doing the videos with, you know, the characters, the puppets and then especially morphing into the Fiend, that there was, I guess, more believability in the supernatural elements. But at the same time, is that what the character needed? You know, when The Undertaker came in, again, it was the 90s, so completely different time. And obviously, we were younger. So, you know, I think you can buy into something more so as a kid than you can as a cynical adult. I don't know. I think that, and, you know, I'm sitting here racking my brain now. I think the processing this, I think my problem with The Fiend was that it went too far. Like it just, well, and we'll get touch on this in a few minutes, but I think the booking just wasn't there for The Fiend like it was for Bray Wyatt. I think with Bray Wyatt, they had a good character and they kind of knew where they were going. But then when you got to The Fiend, it was just like, okay, he's supernatural now. What do we do with him that plays into that character?
Well, and I think that, you know, and this is probably where I get a little pushback, you know, WWE, to me, the reason it has been successful, part of the reason why it has been successful, but also part of its detriment is that audience of one. You know, mm-hmm. there was some control, there was some cohesion, there was someone there that made sure that not every guy that had an idea was going out and executing that idea, which is a little different from the structure of AEW. I feel mm-hmm. like maybe they have a little too much freedom, mm-hmm. whereas WWE has too, or did, I don't know what the new regime is going to be like down the road, but too much conformity and too much restriction. And so there's got to be that happy medium, I think. So you don't have guys that are going out there and just throwing whatever sticks to the wall to see if it sticks. And I almost wonder with Bray Wyatt and the Fiend and that character as it evolved, because they did talk about how much influence and control he had in aspects of that character. I wonder if part of that was it just spilled over and just boiled over and was becoming a bit on the ridiculous side. And again, we're viewing this as, you know, 40 and 50 year old something men and not a 13 or 14 year old that is probably their key demo audience at this point. So it does become an interesting argument, if you will, that how much creative control is appropriate. Because yeah, you've probably got some guys that walk in and women that walk in and have no creativity, no ideas, and are going to do whatever is creative gives them, versus those who are ultra creative and want all that control and autonomy of developing their character, how they see fit and how it should go.
Exactly. Yeah, I... I'm kind of stumped on how I want to phrase this. I don't know. I do think that Bray maybe had too much control, or maybe not even too much control. I think the ideas were just so big, and how do you execute them into a, you know, 3-minute segment, or how, and you know, we've discussed previously on past episodes the difference between a character and a gimmick, and how do you translate a character into a good, or a gimmick into a good match, you know, and tell the story in the wrestling ring. And that's where I think the Fiend got lost, is in the match. I think the Fiend character was good. The Fiend wrestler was not.
And I would argue that the Fiend and Bray Wyatt should have been separate. Mm-hmm. Bray Wyatt should have been the host of Firefly Fun. This, and again, I'm just a fan and I'm just stating my opinion. I'm not saying, you know, that I have any better ideas or what anything. But as a fan, I loved the Firefly Funhouse stuff. I loved it. Yeah. You know, it was a throwback to like the Pee Wee's Playhouse from when we were kids or, you know, teenagers and that kind of silly, campy 80s, you know, it put off that vibe to me. Obviously Wyndham Rotunda plays both of these characters, but I think that the Fiend should have been just the Fiend. And they always said the Fiend to Bray Wyatt. And I mean, I know we all know it, but I think there could have been some separation. I don't know what that accomplished. Well,
and I mean, in that regard, is it the same thing as the demon Finn Balor?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. I think that there should have been a better separation of those two things. We know who it is. It's kind of like, I'm trying to think of someone that would have been, if there even was anyone that we ever saw that did it.
Well, I think
really separate
in this context. I think it'd be like Bruce Banner and the Incredible Hulk,
right?
Where Finn Balor and Bray Wyatt are the guys that you get in most matches, and then when things escalate to a certain point, that's when you bring out the Fiend and the Demon.
Perfect example.
And yes, we know who they are, but now it's a whole new persona.
Yeah, because they didn't say Bruce Banner, the Hulk,
is,
you know, saving the day or whatever. Yeah, that's perfect. That's perfect. I like that. But yeah, so, you know, and obviously, and kind of the part that I want to bring all this together with is the Wyatt family. You know, we had Luke Harper, we had Eric Rowan, and then eventually Braun Strowman. Luke Harper eventually leaves the company and goes to AEW. As Brody Lee, but they broke the family apart at some point as well. And I do feel like, I don't think they ever had a big blow off where they all feuded, but they just kind of went their separate ways. And Harper and Rowan, you know, Harper had an independent or a singles run for a bit and won the IC belt, like you mentioned, but then eventually he and Rowan reunite and team as the Bludgeon Brothers. And I think Bray was still kind of there and did some stuff with Braun. I know he and Braun had a bit of a feud. And I think he beat Braun maybe at one point for the championship too. I think Bray had two title runs, and I think one of those was beating Braun, but I could be wrong. Anyway, I'm saying all that to say, you know, the Wyatt family became this thing, and then when The Fiend kind of went on his own and had Alexa Bliss for a little bit and did all of that, the Firefly Funhouse, and then those characters came to life at Extreme Rules in, what was it, 2022? And then we saw the introduction of some new characters, this Uncle Howdy, which is who I want to talk about a little bit more as well. Mm-hmm. We now know that that was Bo Dallas, Bray's brother. So now that Bray Wyatt has passed away, he's not coming, you know, obviously we're not going to see the Bray Wyatt character come back. Can they move forward? Because there are obviously been teases and hints, and even over the weekend as we're recording this, I've read speculation of what's happening. We watched the documentary, and if you watch all the way to the end, if you haven't, spoiler alert, you know, they were good with the Bray Wyatt character of putting in these little Easter eggs, and they've been doing it on SmackDown. I don't know about Raw, but there have been Easter eggs kind of teasing the return of the Wyatt family, for lack of a better word. And I don't know if it's the Wyatt family or if it's the Firefly Funhouse characters or what we're going to see, but I think something is coming. And my question to you, Chad, is can this, and you listening and watching, weigh in the comments, can this continue and can this be successful? Obviously it can continue, but can it be successful without the principal character, Bray Wyatt? I'm going to give you my short answer, and that is no.
Yeah. I'm going to say, can it? Yes. Can it? Let me rephrase. Can it go without Bray? Yes. Will it be good? That's where I don't know, because watching the documentary, it seems like Bray was the one, the idea man. He was the one who was always, you know, like, oh, I got this idea. I want to do this. I want it to look like this. I want, you know, the story to be this. Whereas nothing against Taylor Rotunda or Bo. And I think the Bo Dallas gimmick got shortchanged on the main roster because I think it, you know, it was great. I don't know if he has that same creative mentality. Mm-hmm. And that's only because I haven't seen it. I haven't, you know, hasn't been given the chance. So if you're going to do this, that's what it's going to hinge on, the creative aspect and the storytelling aspect. And just bringing Uncle Howdy out, bringing Husky Pig out, or whatever his name was, Sister Abigail, the Vulture or the Buzzard, you know, just bringing them back out, which that was the thing that I kind of trying to remember during the documentary, was when those characters showed up in the crowd at the end of, I think it was Elimination Chamber or Extreme Rules. It was like, okay, this is interesting, but then they never did anything with those characters.
Right.
You know, and I think that's, and I don't remember the timeline of how long it was until Bray was off, you know, off camera.
It wasn't long. So that was in October of 22. He wrestled LA Knight at Royal Rumble in January of 23.
And that's it.
And then I think they had one more match in February of 93 or of 23. And he was gone.
Okay. So maybe we just didn't get the opportunity to see that those characters come to fruition. But yeah. And then I think it's also going to be important if you do bring those characters back, who you have under the mask, you know, to take it, use this analogy. I don't know if you watched The Dark Side of the Ring about Terry Gordy, but when he came back as the Executioner, you know, in WWE, he had severe brain damage. And so he wasn't the Terry Gordy that fans knew.
Yeah.
So putting Terry Gordy under a mask wasn't, I mean, they said they did it to save his, you know, save face with him. So fans that didn't know.
Sure.
But you weren't taking, you know, when you put John Cena under a mask and call him Juan Cena, you're still getting John Cena.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you take, if you take guy in NXT that isn't doing anything and put him under a mask, you're not really losing anything. But if you bring Eric Rowan back and put him under a mask, are you getting Eric Rowan? You know, I think I made a point in there, but I'm not really sure.
Yeah. No, I get it. You know, because I'm going to tie this to Hollywood as part of my reason why I don't think it's going to work. It won't be the same, obviously. And do you, I feel like a wrestling connection to this would be, you know, Chavo Guerrero, after Eddie Guerrero died, they tried, and I don't think the fans bought it. I think as much as the fans love Bray Wyatt, you know, they equally loved Eddie Guerrero, but I don't think just because that brotherly or that family connection, I don't see it working. And if you look at Hollywood, you know, look at back in the day when John Ritter died, you know, he was the star of Eight Simple Rules for Dating My Teenage Daughter. And when he died, the show went on for another couple of seasons. They brought in some replacement characters, but it was not the same show. And not that I watched religiously either versions of that show, but I feel like that show would have been on a lot longer had John Ritter not passed away. And by the same token, if you look at, you know, I think maybe one successful, and successful is a relative term, and I don't mean this to sound derogatory, but when David Von Erich died in 1984, and he was going to, or by all accounts, was going to be the guy to beat Ric Flair, the Von Erich to beat Ric Flair. And when he died, they continued on with that and ended up going with Kerry to do that. And it was a short-lived title run. But I do feel like that's an example of where taking that tragedy and carrying on, and it was successful at least for a little bit. But I question and wonder. But I don't think fans would buy Bo Dallas coming back either at this point. I don't know. I feel weird even talking or saying these kinds of things, because I do think Bo Dallas was great in NXT, but he did not translate on the main roster. And I don't know if that would be... Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think the problem with Bo going from NXT to the main roster is, one, NXT had just, you know, started airing on the network. Fans weren't really... They weren't used to NXT like they are now. Whereas now, if you have a guy in NXT that gets called up, the chances more of your audience has seen him and has known him. Whereas... Bo, the gimmick that he was doing in NXT had been built up over, I think, a few years. And then they just took that gimmick and automatically put it on the main roster. And everybody's like, I don't get it because I don't know the backstory.
Yeah.
So I think that's the problem. To your point, you know, you talk about John Ritter passing, you know, Coach passed away on Cheers. And they brought in Woody. And that show was successful.
Right.
The on Night Court, the Bailiffs passed away. Two of them, and they brought in Marshall Warfield, you know, eventually in that show. But those are supporting characters. Those aren't the main characters. So
it's funny because those were on my list too. So I think it's funny that we're on that same wavelength.
Yeah, well, we're old. so I think not to downplay or try to be insensitive, but it would be like if Bray was still here and they brought someone in to replace Luke Harper, I think it would be a better fit. Whereas now, if you're trying to replace your main guy, the other problem is, you know, you mentioned Chavo Guerrero, and again, not to slight Chavo, obviously much more successful career than I've ever had, but after Eddie's passing, he became kind of an Eddie tribute wrestler. Like he started doing all of Eddie's maneuvers, and he stopped being Chavo.
Yeah.
And I think that's where if you bring in Uncle Howdy or Bo Dallas and try to make them Bray Wyatt, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
And I also think, unfortunately, due to the knowledge that fans have now, if you bring in Bo Dallas, they're going to chant for Bray. And it's not necessarily a disrespectful thing, but a more of, hey, we're acknowledging how great Bray was. And now you're, and so I don't know if Bo would have the chance to be himself.
Yeah.
So maybe bringing in him as Uncle Howdy, again, you got to get the character and the gimmick to work together, but it might be the better chance for him to, I mean, if he wants to get back into wrestling, that's the way to do it.
Because I feel like it's inevitable that we're going to get something just based on the things we've seen here recently on the show. And then, of course, the internet chatter. But it just, to me, it becomes a slippery slope because, yeah, you want, there comes a time where it's like, as hard as it is, we've got to let that go and move forward. Because, and again, I guess we're speculating and seeing what is going to happen. But to me, you know, thinking back, had Hawk or Animal died during the prime of the Road Warriors, yeah. You know, do you put Hawk then on as a single star and, you know, or do you bring in a new Animal, someone else to fill that role and call him something different? It doesn't have the same feel and the same vibe, even if it was somebody that was looked like Animal and talked like Animal and wrestled like Animal. To me, it wouldn't have been the same as the original. And
yeah, well, I mean, it worked for the Ultimate Warrior.
Wow.
But I mean, your Road Warrior example, I mean, they tried it. I mean, granted, it was really past the prime
of right.
the Road Warriors, but yeah, it didn't take because it just, I think when you come off as a ripoff, and for anybody who may have missed it, I wasn't talking about the Renegade in Warrior. I was talking about Kerry Von Erich replacing Ultimate Warrior, becoming Ultimate Warrior. Google it. But yeah, if you're, again, you have to be your own unique character or person. You can't just mimic someone else.
Right, right. You know, because as we said, the situation sucks. And, you know, even had he not died, Bray Wyatt, that is, even if he had not died, it sounded like to me, just based on what the mom had said and what Taylor, you know, Bo Dallas had said, his in-ring career was probably not going to continue if he was going to have to get a pay. He could have. I don't know. I'm just speculating based on heart health issues and the very rigorous and strict and stringent WWE wellness policy. I don't know that he would have been able to continue on in the ring, which to me, it would have been a no-brainer. He becomes a part of your creative team. And I can only imagine the talents that he would have developed and nurtured on that level.
Let me play devil's advocate here, though. Would he be a good creative person, or was he so singular-minded in his character that he couldn't expand to multiple characters?
That's true. That's a great point. Because they have said, you know, Ted DiBiase himself is, you know, he was a great in-ring wrestler, but he could not translate that then as a producer, coach, or trainer, whatever they call him, you know, the behind the scenes guys. So yeah, that's a good point. I don't know.
I mean, I think they would have given him the opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see what happens, but yeah.
Yeah. I feel bad for, obviously the family has lost a beloved member. That's where my first, you know, when I start talking about the wrestling, this is a wrestling podcast. And so that's why we're talking about the wrestling side of it. So on that end of it, I do feel bad for Bo Dallas or, you know, Taylor Rotundo, because he is kind of in limbo. And I know he had been released and wasn't working for the company, but obviously was part of that presentation at the 2023 Royal Rumble as Uncle Howdy. So does the family move on with Uncle Howdy leading the charge? I see him more as a, and a no disrespect, but a Luke Harper. You know, to me, Bo Dallas and Eric Rowan and Braun Strowman and Alexa Bliss, maybe, I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to give it a chance if that's the unit that they bring back. But it's going to depend a lot on the presentation. And then do you weigh in so heavily on, like you said, are we going to then cross that line of exploitation of Bray Wyatt's death? But you can't, to me, this faction is nothing without that Bray Wyatt influence. So it becomes a double-edged sword.
It's going to be a fine line to cross. And that, you know, also, you know, with the Uncle Howdy character, how much did Bray and Taylor discuss the character? You know, obviously, like I said, Bo Dallas was portraying the character when he would show up, but he didn't really do anything.
Right, right, right.
So does Bo know what the character was supposed to be, or is he going to make it his own? And there's no right or wrong in this scenario. It's just, again, it goes back to what I've said a couple times already. It has to be a full-fledged character and not, as you just mentioned, it can't just rely on, hey, remember Bray Wyatt? Bray Wyatt created this character. You know, this was the alter ego of Bray Wyatt. It's just, you're going to have to make, and I mean, based on the Uncle Howdy image that we've seen, I don't really have a lot of, not faith, but a lot of expectation for that character in the ring, if that makes sense.
Right. Well, the other thing that I would question too is they have pulled the curtain all the way back.
Yeah.
We have seen how the sausage is made, so to speak, with this documentary. So then does it become hard to, you know, because in the 90s, in the 80s, we didn't have these documentaries. We didn't know Mark Calloway. We didn't know Mike Hegstrand. And, you know, we didn't know these characters.
Warrior.
Personas. Yeah. You know, so does exposing it in that regard hurt or does it help? Because we are a curious society. People listen to hours of wrestling podcasts to hear the behind the scenes scoop. You know, people wanted to see the all out fight on AEW. And so we're curious by nature.
Yeah.
And does that curiosity lead to because I don't think there's any other industry. Like, would we sit there and want to know everything there is to know about the Terminator? You know, and I'm just throwing out a random movie, but
I got three letters for you. TMZ.
They've ruined society.
Yeah. Well, you know, to that point, you know, look at Sting, the wrestler, not musician. No one wants to know about the musician. Tantric, 6 hour sex. Come on, man. but, you know, we never saw him as Steve Borden.
Right.
Through his career until like the last few months of his AEW career when it was winding down. Mm-hmm. And then that's, you know, that, I mean, he brought his kids into the picture to, you know, before we'd never seen them. I didn't realize how young his sons were. I thought they would have been much older.
Yeah.
But again, that's at the tail end of the career where you're like paying respect to Steve, not necessarily Sting, because you're paying respect for the guy for the career.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas coming in now with, you know, with these new characters, yeah, it's going to be, I don't know. It is. And I do think, you know, unfortunately the curtain has been pulled back too far where I think they're, especially in the characters like this, where you need an air of mystery, where you need, you know, something where you don't know everything. So you don't know. I mean, when Bray came back with Firefly Funhouse, I'll get it right one of these days, it was completely different. And it was not what you expected. And it was changed up. But, you know, when he first debuted as Bray Wyatt, you got the Husky Harris chance.
Right.
Because fans knew who he was. And fans can be moronic at times. And instead of giving something a chance, just latch on. And I think now, especially knowing, like I said, with this documentary out and just knowing, you know, once Bray passed, the wealth of information that came out about his life, are the fans going to sit back and enjoy the ride? Or are they going to try to be like, oh, you know, we know what happened behind the scenes. Oh, I got to chant, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Just to be like cool and edgy and, you know, I'm going to record myself and put it on TikTok and it's going to be like, I'm going to go viral, you know, which is, says more about our society than it does wrestling. But
yeah, that's true. I agree. Chad, any other thoughts or feelings as we wrap up this week's episode? You know, obviously, like everything, you know, wrestling is a never ending story and we'll have to wait and see. And if this, becomes successful, if it fails, either way, you know, time will tell. But I'm going to obviously be rooting and cheering for for Taylor Rotundo and whatever he chooses to do and moving forward. And I hope that he gets another opportunity, because I do think, like we said earlier, the Bo Dallas character did kind of get gypped and on the main roster. Yeah. But you know, what happens next with all of those other folks? Eric Rowan has allegedly canceled all of his indie bookings. So I do, again, believe something's coming. And with all the hype and build that it's gotten, I hope it's successful. But I also hope that those characters or those folks are able to build and take this tragedy and then build it into something and that it's not all done in vain and then tarnishes maybe the Bray Wyatt, the Wyndham Rotundo legacy. So we'll see.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think, again, as fans, we need to give things a chance before just, you know, dragging them through the mud and critiquing them online. But I'm going to be cautiously optimistic, because I think, again, the talent is there, but it's how that talent is used.
Yeah. Well said, Chad. Friends, thank you for listening and or watching to this week's episode. We want to hear your thoughts as well. Weigh in, leave a comment, leave a review. Is the new Wyatt family or the speculative new Wyatt family going to be a success? If it happens, let us know in the comment section what you're thinking and feeling at this time. Thanks again for listening, watching, subscribing. We will talk again very soon.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.